You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
Piece they're going to play this evening.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's my favorite Friday night song by Wax Taylor. Let this soak in a little bit.
Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, your attention, please.
And now the moment we've been waiting for is here.
All right, it's 7:02 p.m. I usually start talking at 7:02 p.m., so I figured we'd give a little space into whatever. Had some thoughts tonight, and I'm going to put on the Skype early. I know Mike May is going to slip in here in a little bit. We had some thoughts outside that I thought would be awesome to share with you guys. Just a really cool conversation that I think you guys can really take part in about our culture, especially here in the United States. And especially when it comes to filmmaking, storytelling, movies, and the great entertainment icons in the past, of the past, that are still with us, still alive, but are part of a generation that is soon going to be leaving. And we were wondering if there's ever going to be a return to anything like that class that... You know, aside from the standards, and of course, there were different social standards back then too. But I would have to say that there was also a feeling of familiarity between. And I'm just observing this too, because obviously we were born in the mid '80s, so we don't really have a big connection to the Mickey Rooneys of the world, and even though we knew who he was, we didn't have a huge connection to the Don Rickles of the world, not like our parents did. You know, the Dean Martin roasts, all those guys. When you watch those Dean Martin roasts from the 70s or whenever the hell they were from, dude, this looked like a group of good old boys that were just everybody. They're like everybody in the country's favorite drunken uncles. Seriously, it seemed like, for me, from an outside observer, watching how these old time entertainment shows translate, it seemed like they were just like extensions of us. You know, it doesn't seem that way anymore. You know, there's no glow or aura around it. Feels weird. And of course, you know, society is so toxic these days. Nobody really likes each other. And everybody's trying to make a statement. And the world has been taken over by a bunch of Marxists. But we had some stuff we want to talk about. The first thing, so we're going to be talking about that. You guys call in and we'll get all that going. But when I walked in here today, something really weird happened. Yo, Matt, you know Jimmy's Ice Cream?
The ice cream truck?
Yeah.
The one that sells crack out of it, yeah.
What?
Yeah, he pushes crack. Every ice cream truck in Port Chester does.
You can't make that kind of an accusation.
Allegedly.
Okay, so then you're kidding.
Allegedly.
Okay. All the. Okay, there you go. So, Jimmy's allegedly. No, I've eaten Jimmy for a long, long time.
It's really good, right?
Dude.
His ice cream's really good,
his
right?
His vanilla
really
ice
addictive,
cream.
Right?
His... Son of a bitch. You almost got me. I was like, yeah, actually, you know, you're right. I can't go without it. But in either case, this is the first time I saw Jimmy in a long time. He must have been strung out for a while. And I didn't see, I don't remember seeing him driving around in a while. You know, maybe not the last two summers. Unless
that's
we're
the singing guy, right?
No, that's Dominic.
So he's Dominic soft Ranieri. Serve guy. You're talking about the soft serve
Jimmy's
guy.
Jimmy's a soft serve guy, which his vanilla
is. He used to live
is,
at the end of my street.
His vanilla is better than Carvel.
There.
His
yeah,
vanilla's always been better than Carvel.
It is lovely. It's and come in it.
And Dominic is a good friend of my family's. I know Dominic, the singing ice cream man, for a long time. Classically, I believe he's a classically trained vocalist. In either case, I remember when. In 1995, when I was the lead role in that that opera, Amal and the Night Visitors, Anthony was one of the shepherd boys, and I was Amal. My father was Casper, one of the kings, one of the three kings. Because if you know the story about Amal and the Night Visitors, it's the story of the boy, this you know,
I don't know
that made its
is.
Way to the his made his way to the manger. It was a miracle along the way. To the manger, the night of Jesus' birth. Okay, and Amal is this shepherd boy who doesn't really have any sheep left, and he's crippled, and he's got a crutch, and he's hobbling around and all that stuff, but he's just a really good boy. And he loves his mother, and his mother loves him, and they're just a good family. Although they come from nothing, and he's in a huge disadvantage. And that's the one thing I can say about a Roman Catholic upbringing. All of the parables I was ever taught showed people who had little that were so meek, you know, so meek about it and so open about it and still maintained a gentle, loving nature with each other. That was the one thing that I always saw as a constant in all those, especially in these plays whenever I would do them. That was local community theater. And that always made me feel nice, you know? That always made me feel hopeful that even if I had nothing, I can still be happy. Because all these characters that we were exposed to were always in good spirits, like Amal was, even though he was a crippled shepherd boy in this play that I'm describing to you.
Because there was no government control, that's why.
Yeah, the Roman Empire was nothing at all. That was absolutely nothing at all.
They were pretty lax, bro.
They were just, you know, that's it.
The Romans, they were good.
But the Romans were actually pretty liberal. If you...
Yeah, blowjobs everywhere.
Oh, dude, did you hear that there's... Oh, whatever. It's not even worth it. I will bring it up later. Well, fucking, I heard about a blowjob, a fellatio cafe that's gonna be making a grand opening in the UK. It's just we're just done. We're done. Where you can go there and there's waitresses and then there's like specialists or something like that. The specialist or whoever the hell it is will come to your table and administer a blowjob.
Oh, yeah.
Administer a blowjob.
Fucking...
It's what we're talking about here. It's your job to suck penises all night. Now listen, you got to do what you want to do. Fine. But I gotta say something. Like, and once again, not a prude. Okay, not a prude. Is everybody in here like getting their penis sucked?
Oh yeah, I love it.
It's a good feeling, right?
It's the best. It's especially great. When you don't have to put a condom on.
It's a good feeling.
Not a fucking prostitute.
It's a good feeling. Okay, that's a good meatball. That's a good meatball.
Fucking blowjob.
But let's just be honest about this. People say live and let live. How far do you take a very passive, live and let live, standardless existence? How far do you take that? I'm not asking because I feel like this person's business should be shut down. If that's what society is demanding, if that's what the new moral code is, fine. I don't care. I'm not saying that this guy should be, this is a disgrace. I'm asking a very, very just basic human question. Do you think, because, you know, that's not infringing on anybody's way of life, we all have sex, it's not infringing on anybody's sexual orientation. I'm sure, you know, men, gay or straight, like to get their dick sucked. You know, it's so it's not a question of that. It's just a question of human sexuality and our abilities to express ourselves sexually with our partners over the course of a lifetime is not being infringed here. What we're asking is there a certain standard? Should there be a certain standard of good form? Nobody's saying don't have sex. Nobody's saying don't have gay sex. Nobody's saying anything. I'm asking, do you think there should be a certain social standard? I just want to know what you guys think.
I think there shouldn't be any blowjob cafes.
I mean, listen, there's always been peep shows, always been titty bars and whatever. Yeah, fine. But when you start talking about going to, I don't know. I mean, brothels have always been around. They've always been, but as far as this is commercialized blowjobs, though, you know, as far as somebody who wants to go out and seek it, there obviously are going to be options, but you have to go out and seek it. But for this stuff to be getting, I mean, this is commercialized blowjobs. It's gonna be.
Are they hiring?
Probably, dude. You should go out there.
I'm gonna get a job there.
A lot of guys would go for you. They'd be like, "Oh, this guy's definitely a tough one. I wonder if he'll let me punch him in the face afterwards." Little do they know, you would actually really appreciate it. You can punch me in the face. Go ahead, $50 extra.
What do you think is worse, shit like that, like be desensitized to shit like that, or if they would bring back like gladiatorial combat where people would be willing to go and fight to the death?
That's another question of decency, because we were talking about this before, about what was it, a couple of weeks ago, what the hell was on the agenda? There was a plate dueling. We were talking about sanctioned dueling,
a gentleman's duel.
Yeah,
where
gentleman's
one guy
duel.
Steps up to another guy, slaps him with gloves, and that means you step outside and.
Yeah, or you can set it up like, what was the official duel? It has a Latin term to it, about two, it's what Hamilton and Burr did. I've been reading up a lot about that exchange, to be honest. It's the first story that's told in that Founding Brothers book by Joseph P. Ellis. Everybody should pick that book up, as well as his other book, The Quartet, if you want to understand 18th century politics, 18th and early 19th century politics, and the political climate, social and political climate in this country. I would go and pick up those books. They are integral to understanding the mindset of what was going on and how similar it was to today. And it explains a lot of the things that people accuse the Founding Fathers of not addressing off the bat for one way or another. And while we're on that subject real quick, because I want to get to Mike May, I would also suggest, because I know this man is a polarizing figure, and I'm not suggesting you listen to his radio show or anything like that, but Glenn Beck and The Blaze, he narrates all of The Blaze's serials, history serials, the podcasts. He narrates them. I believe that they're written by Pat Gray, mostly, and all that. And they have a great team of researchers out there, despite what you may think or roll your eyes to the name, the utterance of his name. Okay? Regardless of that, I really do believe that the history serials that they put out are unbelievable, especially the ones about the abolitionist movements, and our founding fathers on slavery, because there's a lot of disinformation out there, a lot of negativist bullshit that's out there, and it's peddled out there for a very, very big reason, to make sure that there is always a large part of the country, a meaningful part of the population that feels like they have no place in the country, that they've never had a part in it, a stake in it, that nobody's ever gone to bat for them, that their lineage and their existence, and I'm talking primarily about the black community. This type of historical revisionism is there to take somebody's faith away from a country that actually is the best shot we ever had. And the liberation of the black people here, especially in the 18th century, in the 19th century, that's what I'm talking about, the liberation, was one of the greatest feats in mankind. But it wasn't a sole issue war, we understand that, but it created a whirlwind around it. And we did. We went through the growing pains here. And I think that those growing pains are really, really good for people to learn about. A lot of negative stuff there. A lot of ugly stuff to learn about. A lot of ugly stuff. We're still in ugliness right now. People will learn about this part in our history, these years. One way or another, they'll learn about it. Who's going to be telling the story is another business altogether. And speaking of storytelling, because this is a stream of consciousness radio show, that leads us right to something else. Our filmmaker over here, Mike May, who loves to speak on the issue of filmmaking and film and American history, that film as being a part of American history. Those storytellers were very, very important for a long time. We're talking about like the classics. You know, we had the mills of the golden era, silver screen. When you start thinking about Francis Ford Coppola, Steven Spielberg, you know, we start going into that realm. Those we're talking about men and women that are in their 70s and 80s and leaving the planet.
They're not going to be around much longer.
And now you had said something very, very profound about it all. And you said that everything that we love, or so much of what we used to love, is going to die soon. And when you said that, I took that as saying culturally, like a culture that we once knew and how free we were to tell our stories and how unafraid we were to say certain things, because people might not like it, might not agree with it. A church group might ban it. You remember when people cared about what the Catholic League put on its banning list? Shit like that. I mean, we lived through it. Oh, this one banned it. That one doesn't like it. But we didn't expect the world to melt down. Now, there is such fractures in society that it's hard for people to even be themselves in Hollywood. That is supposed to be a free and open storytelling society. So what do you... on that level, what do you think?
I mean, you touched a lot on it, Frank. For me, it's really, I truly feel that, you know, like a lot of things change. You know, we have generational changes and, you know, things change with the times. But I'm truly feeling that the end of free expression and good ideas that are not marred in politics, that are not marred in, you know, certain ideologies, certain ways of thinking, you know, peer pressure. I just believe those days are over, because I feel that everything that is said and done now, whether you want to look at it from an entertainment perspective or just in general, you know, it falls into one of these categories.
I think when you consider, like, we were dropping names like Jerry Lewis out there, considering how he's still alive. And if you look at the breadth of his work, I mean, it's so impressive. And, I mean, we were talking, aside from his time in comedy, he's also a very straight, dramatic actor. He can play straight. I mean, if you watch how he carries himself, even like King of Comedy, love to watch that movie again soon. I mean, that was the first time I ever watched Jerry Lewis play something straight. And it was very interesting to me, because I always thought he was just some nutty professor goofball. And, of course, his time with Dean Martin. But I didn't know how much of a prolific director and a filmmaker he was until I saw a special on him, and how some handbook, directing handbook that he had made and published with all of his ideas and all of his, you know, how-tos, seems to be like a staple in some of the most iconic, especially new generation.
Yeah, and like that, I have the Jaws log every time I shoot, or at least when I shoot a feature. I have the Jaws log from Spielberg about his wonderful film that most people don't realize could have been an unmitigated disaster, and pretty much was, with, you know, thank God for editing. But yeah, I just feel that You know how, you know that old saying that they don't make them like they used to, you know, and we look at you know, our grandparents, the greatest generation, we go, oh, they don't make men like that anymore. They don't make people like that anymore. And it's true.
But why can't we make men like that anymore?
Because unfortunately, we have been so desensitized and censored and everything within that whole process that you can't have somebody like that. You know, when our grandparents had to go and fight, it wasn't even really a thought. You know, they were like, I'm going to go and defend my country and defend my honor. And there's none of that anymore. I mean, how many people are going to... Thank God there are some, and I'm not going to say that there isn't. But you look at it as the numbers dwindling. You know, where, say, and I can give my own experience, you know, 9/11 happened, and I was ready to jump. I called my parents. I told them, I'm going to sign up. I'm going to go. They gave me a lot of stuff for it because I'm an only child. You know, they just didn't want that. But, you know, after some coercing and, you know, sitting me down and make me watch some war movies and really giving it to me, you know, I decided to opt out. And only because, you know, I didn't want to... I was my parents' only son, and, you know, I had personal reasons. But... And then, of course, moving forward years after, saying to myself, wow, I'm really happy I made that decision.
Yeah, man, you know? Because you would have been...
Because I would have been fighting a war that I shouldn't have been fighting.
Yeah. A war that a lot of shit has had. Oh God, that was the end. That was the end of our childhoods. If you want to look at it, that was really the end of our childhoods. I mean, we still had a lot of years of innocence and not knowing ahead of us, but the entire world that we knew—freedom, that feeling of security, safety, the unthinkable things that were to start happening in 2001—that was really the end of it. Anybody who's born around our time, that has to definitively mark it, whether you know it or not. Unless you're living in a cave, I don't know.
That's the problem. Now everything, when it comes to safety and being, you know, safe and secure and protected, it's not just about our lives anymore. It's about our thinking. It's about what we're seeing and what we're allowed to see and what's being put out for us to hear and music and other things. I mean, I every remake that I see now, you know, obviously that's been the trend in Hollywood for so many years, but I just feel that now it's not a trend anymore. It is the norm. It is the pattern moving forward.
Let me ask you something. Let me cut you off. Let me ask you something. This is a more important question now. If... Shit. I just lost it. Wait a second. It's still there. Okay,
get it back.
There it is. So I was thinking about this. People like Mickey Rooney, people like Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, obviously you're in Hollywood, and if you care anything about your reputation or your ability to procure really, really worth it work, you need to protect your political identity or you need to drink the Kool-Aid. We know it. Hollywood is very, very left.
Yes.
Now, as far as now, and I'm not saying this in any way, like Meryl Streep, I wouldn't even ask about. I think she probably was always like that, always a hippie. But if you're coming up in old school Hollywood, you probably have a big theater background. If you're an actor on the screen, you probably have theater somewhere in your past. Anyhow, you're definitely never at any time would be very, very homophobic. I'm sure there have probably been very homophobic actors and actresses out there, but Hollywood, show business, it's full of creative, many gay people. You know, they're known for
it's
it.
At least 70%.
Yeah, they're known for it. It's known to be a staple in the gay community. Very thespian type of people. So I don't think it's ever a part of that, but as far as them being liberal in that way. But do you think that they really shut up and don't answer any of these questions, or at least answer them and just go with the crowd left, as left as they go, even though they don't believe it, when it talk comes around to free speech, when it comes around to things like guns or anything like that? They know the importance of guns and self-protection. They definitely know it. But I think that a lot of these people, they don't want to have Joe Paterno moments where you have these amazing careers and then at the end of your life, you're ruined because of something you said. I have to believe that so many of them, they come from a world that had standards. Even if you are socially liberal as far as not caring about homosexuality and who loves who. But they came from a world where there was cultural standards and norms, not closed-mindedness, but standards and norms. And I just really think that in the effort of saying, I don't want my... They know which way the wind blows. Right. They will be crucified.
But what gets me angry is
Bill Cosby.
It's okay to have exceptions to the rule.
Even though he's
you know,
raping
I mean,
people.
If they're going to vilify anybody that disagrees with their political values or, you know, their acceptance values, okay. I mean, that's... We know that's already a thing. But then why vilify certain people and, you know, champion others? You look at someone like Clint Eastwood, who is probably the...
He's the exception of the rule.
He's the last man standing. And he's the exception to the rules because no one's going to go after Clint. No one's going to say, Clint, oh, I can't believe you're a Republican. You support this. And they're not going to do it because he'd probably tell them to go.
You know what Clint Eastwood is? Clint Eastwood is that great uncle of yours, that veteran great uncle of yours, who whenever you see him at Thanksgiving, you get frustrated with him. But the biggest, because he's set in his ways, but the biggest thing that you get frustrated by is how he defeats your most passionate arguments with simplicity. And deep inside, you know as much as you want to stick it to him, the reason why you're most angry is that he's right.
Right.
And that's just the thing about people like Clint Eastwood. I'm sorry. He's that father figure that some people want to lash out against again because they were shut down by them so many times for being an emotional wreck. The problem is we just had the balls at one time to tell crybabies to shut the fuck up, grow up, and then rejoin the conversation.
The funny thing is that they weren't even really a major part of the conversation up until, I would say, the last 20 or 30 years either. I mean, Hollywood was always kind of like its isolated island and did its own thing. Yes, they funded their own political candidates and things, but it was under the table situation. I mean, with the technology advances and stuff, now it's like, oh, if you don't come out and literally say that you are denouncing, say, Trump, and you're going for Hillary Clinton, if you don't actually do that as part of your public relation campaign for your next upcoming movie, because Will Smith right now, I got to tell you, with Suicide Squad, we were just talking about it. I've heard it sucks. I'm pretty sure it's not that great. Will it be a fun suck? Of course it will be. But what got me so angry...
All sucks are fun.
What got me so angry about that film is that not once, not twice, but at least four times, I've now looked at articles about Will Smith discussing Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. Now he's been using this entire press junket as...
You know, and to say that, oh, Suicide Squad presents diversification in movies.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude,
yeah, look at all the psychos that we've made into heroes. It's an anti-hero hero movie. Okay, it's just, listen, I know that is, it's a long-standing comic book theme. I understand that. But it's so apropos for a movie like this to be done now, even though this is the age of the remakes. It's so apropos to be done now because everything is being inverted in society. Good is bad, up is down, left is right. It's the God is the devil and devil is the God. It really is very, very weird. So I think a movie about inverses, even though society, we've been glorifying anti-hero characters for a while now. I mean, every week we would cheer for Nucky Thompson, Tony Soprano. We had so much invested in that murdering psychopath.
But my favorite anti-hero of all time.
We get immersed. We've been taught to love. We've been taught to understand why. Try to understand the good person behind the killer.
But I feel like it's now it's a matter of stature. Where if you've reached a certain plateau in your career, or if you've reached a certain level of respect in this business, that no one's going to speak out against you. No one's going to question your judgment. They might say they disagree with you or they think that's ridiculous that you're taking that talking point, but they're not going to go to the extent that everybody's going to and, denouncing you and saying they're never going to watch your movies again.
Yeah.
And going on to Rotten Tomatoes and, you know, or whatever.
You become Rachel
Twitter
Dash.
And posting all this stuff. Right. Because it's sabotage. It's literally career sabotage now that people are doing, where if you don't like something someone's saying, or you don't particularly understand where they're coming from on something, or they tell you it's this thing but it's that thing. And it's on both sides. It's not just the crybaby left. A lot of it sometimes is the wacko right people too. I've seen it on both sides, more to the left. But you know, if somebody doesn't like something, they're so venomously angry and frustrated, and like it has to be denounced and burned in flames. And I don't get it. I mean, look, I didn't want to watch the Ghostbusters. One tenth of the reason, because they decided to go with an all-female cast instead of just kind of mixing it up, because it was to prove a point.
Yeah,
this is the problem. And then saying, women should be, you know, women should be in films and be stars in films. I'm sorry, did I miss the 50s and the 40s and all these, you know, golden age of Hollywood films with, you know, Audrey Hepburn and, you know. I mean, I can't even think of anybody, but you know what I'm talking about. Like, I'm like, bleh.
I mean, that's it. There you go. Audrey Hepburn and Judy Hepburn. Wasn't there a Judy in there?
Judy Garland. And point is that all these classic people that were in films that were leading women and men in roles, okay, that you went to go see the movie because they were in it, not because you didn't know anything about the movie.
I want
to
watch Ghostbusters, though. I need to see it. I have to look at it.
You know, I've heard mixed things. And for all intents and purposes, maybe there's some salvageable stuff. I highly doubt it. You know,
no, I have no trust in it. I definitely don't.
Neither. Because it was so. I would have actually, if it wasn't for the overtly political, dramatized nonsense, and Sony taking a big part of that, and Paul Feig, who was the director, taking a big part of that. And I was very ashamed of Paul Feig for what he did to people. He was going at people directly and telling them, you know, you're a bunch of assholes, and you disgust me, and you don't want change, and you're misogynistic, and all this. It's like, dude, you're a director of a movie. Shouldn't you just stay out of this?
Yeah.
You know, and just let the studio handle the backlash.
Yeah. No, because you have to understand. I always say it. Everybody wants to be the next Abby Hoffman now. Everybody wants to be known for their stand for civil rights, even though civil rights are just becoming, I don't even know what the hell it means anymore. It's like somebody, the second that somebody comes up with something else they identify for, that everybody starts pushing media time behind. And then that person isn't served an ice cream cone exactly the way that they wanted, and they blame it on some kind of a phobia that was made up that same week. Another director will come forward and say something about it so that everybody knows that he's down with the cause. He's here, man. I'm here. You're on the right side of history, or are you wrong?
That voice makes me want to watch basketball. You got to fight it.
You got to fight it.
You know, I was thinking about everything. I was just thinking about yesterday, because I go through some periods where I can't help. Like, it drives me nuts, and I'm grateful. I'm actually grateful that I'm not, you know, like you, Frank, in the sense that you think you have dedicated a whole show to politics. I'm grateful that I'm not like that, because it would drive me nuts. Because I have times where I'm thinking about it a lot, and I'm just like thinking in my mind, like, you know, I'm kind of playing back, like, you know, and thinking about everything that's happening in the world with all this racial inequality and all that stuff, and it hit me the other day that I'm like, you know something? Did I ask for this? Did anybody ask for this? We were born into this planet, and then all of a sudden we feel like all of a sudden we inherit the problems of the world. And it's like we feel like it's our responsibility to somehow contribute to fix the problems of the world. Think about how almost arrogant that is for people.
Very arrogant.
Or, like, to think that, like, you know, you want to figure something out that is way bigger than you are. It just makes no sense. You're never going to do it. Even the greatest speakers, or you know, the people who have made dents,
You think that, you know, if they didn't fix the problems, all the, I mean, they provided material for people to share now on Facebook, quotes of quotes,
yeah,
to get likes.
That's the other thing.
That's pretty much it.
And that's the other thing. People are in this mode of they take what they want, they leave what they don't. Instead of looking back to see why people like Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, anybody that spoke out for civil rights or anything like that, especially during the 60s, were actually getting a lot of attention. And they were actually at the forefront of a movement that was going forward. Yes, there were race riots. Yes, there were times where things got heated. But a largely peaceful movement in the face of resistance. You know, it was the images coming over the television set of young black boys and men getting hosed down in the streets and having dogs sicked on them and being beaten with batons by Southern Democrats that, you know, that turned the tide for people, because they saw what was happening to a people who, whether or not you were with the times of as far as, you know, letting your daughter or letting your son date somebody of another race, it doesn't matter about that. When you see a human being being abused and they're not fighting back and they're not doing anything to provoke it except trying to post their grievances, you're exposing what the problem is. You're showing people that. And it was that really connected and took hold. If anybody was seeing, you know, looting and rioting and the stuff that we've seen today and the assassination of police officers and all that stuff, it takes a completely different effect. Watch, look, the entire country is polarized. There's no unity. You'd think that there would be, well, there's the healing moment. No, because you want to know, this actually, it's funny that this, you had that thought that led me to this, because I was thinking this earlier on today. You know when somebody gets together and really wants to fix a problem. If there's a problem that needs to be fixed and people believe that this needs to be fixed, then it will happen. Simple as that. It will happen because people will come to the table. They will be able to do one of two things, though. They have to be able to do two things. They have to be able to clearly express what this ordeal has cost them and what the damages to them have been and what they feel about it. They then have to be able to very clearly and with an open heart admit all of their own mistakes and all of the problems that they should take responsibility for. When you have two parties of people that sit down and are willing to accept responsibility for their end and admit and discuss what the entire ordeal has done to them as a group or an individual and be open and honest about that, then you're going to be able to push past things and actually take care of each other's business, call truces where you have to, and walk away enlightened. When somebody comes to the table that wants the other person to kneel before them, that wants white people to get to the back of the line instead of locking arm in arm at the front of the line, that is not an equality movement. That is not, this is not a group of people who want to come together and make something right. It's not. It's somebody who wants to be told they want to be anointed. That's it. I mean, they're expressing it in every way, shape, or form. When you go with a list of demands, but you shy away and deflect away from the responsibility that you have to your own communities, you don't show up to a negotiation of peace with a list of demands and no responsibility taken. And that is the difference of how easy it is to put all this to bed. But it makes you wonder, if it's that easy and nobody's doing it, then there you go. The whole scheme is up. Somebody's making money off of it. If it can't go away, despite its ease to put it away, then somebody's making money off of it.
Of course.
And that's it. Yeah. So follow that. That's all you need to know.
That flyer I showed you for Sunday, you know, on it, it's got a GoFundMe page.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like GoFund what? You're having a hopefully a civil public protest, you know, and you're gonna walk down, you know, from one end of Neuchâtel to the other, and that say what you got to say, and that should be it. And people that support it, great, you know, and people that think it's whatever, then that's fine. But that's a bad division. See, I would go and I would want to listen to what they have to say, but why do I have to have the feeling that if I go just to listen, that I'm automatically going to be vilified because A, the color of my skin, okay, or B, you know, that I'm not, that maybe I might disagree.
Yeah, it's a completely unapproachable group of people.
You know?
It's a completely unapproachable group of people. I do not, I'll tell you something, you feel welcome in a place, you feel welcome in a place, and you don't know why. Okay, energetically, if you listen in, you just feel welcome somewhere, okay? And I'll tell you, I had a welcoming experience in that Buddhist church in New York City. When I went, I was doing that that class in college. You walk in, and there was just people of all types there that were, like, happy to see you. And so happy that you're joining, offering tea, all this stuff. I'm like, wow, I fucking feel like, I felt great. I wasn't uncomfortable at all. You think that, you'd think that some of these equality groups would want people to feel like, oh my God, come in here and feel what equality feels like. Mm-hmm. Come in
yeah,
here.
Exactly.
No, come in here. Exactly. Feel what exactly. Equality is like.
I want to know what equality feels like.
I want to know what that feels like.
I want to know what it feels like because no one knows.
You guys should go to Utah.
Because, you know, everyone wants it, but they're not broadcasting that energy.
And not only that, think of it this way. Whether or not a black person walks into some, it's all relative to what's going on right now. In the way that, yeah, you can look out there and you can say, you can take the whole population. But think about it. If a white person walks into a room full of black people that are, you know, skeptical of them and all that stuff, there's inequality there. They're in a position of power. He's not. There's inequality in another one. If you're feeling... Five white people that are like burning a hole in a black person's head for being in a room and not feeling really comfortable around them. There you go. There's the white person. There's the five against one. There's a you, if you take those two little universes, the five on ones in different rooms. I mean, there's always inequality. You and I can feel inequality any point of the day, depending on where we are. There's different in neighborhoods, parts of town. You know, everybody treats each other differently. And especially yeah, when the makeup of the room is different.
That's the other thing, too. No, people generally stick to small groups of people. A lot of people don't want to be bothered with, like, a lot of people don't want to get together. You know, they don't, you know, there's just, everyone has their cliques. And stuff, and it's just, you know, most of the people that people, that rail against are people that even if like these people had a change of heart and were no longer the way they were, which is the reason why they're even talking about them in the first place, they wouldn't befriend these people. You know, like they don't want to have anything to do with these people anyway.
I think I've been befriended by at least four people.
People are just like we're just. We're very picky with who we want to be around.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's almost like everybody feels like they haven't been invited to some great party. It's like, what are you talking about? We're all just trying to go to work. We're all just trying to fucking pay bills. I'm not thinking about my skin. And you say, well, you're not thinking about your skin because you're white. Oh, here we go. There's a default. It's easy. See, it's easy to do.
Oh, no. I do it all the time. I always hear, I hear the responses all the time.
I know.
When I think about it, because I'm like,
how do you argue this?
I don't want to argue. Like, I actually want to find a common ground, but it's the hardest thing to find a common ground because just when you think you might have thought of something, that you say it and it's offensive, you know, or it's not.
Yep. Yep.
It's very fucked up.
It's amazing.
Like I can say, coming from my own experience, man, I grew up around. I was raised by black people. I was raised by black people,
dude,
Spanish people.
I've seen.
You know,
I've seen all the pictures, man. I couldn't believe your dojo was. Is it mostly black students?
I would say.
These were big now, men too. I would not want to get kicked by any of them.
Dangerous guys, and you know this is where I get frustrated. I just got to vent for a second, because you know my father always taught me that you know everybody's a brother, you know.
Everybody's what?
Everybody's a brother. That's what my father always said. Everybody's a brother. My father grew up in the Lower East Side, you know, Delancey and all that, and grew up around some pretty bad people. And a lot of those guys, you know, being mixed races and stuff. And I, too, grew up around a lot of guys who I'm not going to say that they're bad people, but they may have done some bad things in their life and regretted it or whatever, did time. But the point is that I never, from a little kid, even growing up now, have never understood where a racial or color barrier difference meant anything, because I've always been exposed to just having a multicultural respect level with people. And yes, it's a common thing that unites us, is martial arts. But I just feel like that in general. I'm like, I don't feel like I have anything different from anybody other than maybe a few little quirky personal
traits. Dude, it's sad to me. It's sad to me. And you know, what's really sad is that I think people like us and a lot of our listeners, because we think on different levels. And I think the saddest part about it is, in ignorance there's bliss, and we don't have the luxury of being ignorant to what's really going on. We're seeing everything for what it is. We're seeing the right and the left. We're seeing both parties. We're seeing the black and the white. And we're seeing everything, but not attached to one side or the other. And when you're not attached to one side or the other and you haven't been affected by the propaganda machine, it's very, very hard for somebody who's actually grounded in a lot more of a realistic view of what's going on, an unemotional, detached view of what's going on. It's harder for us because it's just, oh my God, we could get along in that world. We don't have any gripes with anybody. And it's just to see this shit go on and on and on. But you can't unsee it.
We did. It was the 90s. We had a decade where I don't recall. I mean, with the exception of like the Rodney King riots, I don't remember any major racial tension thing. I never seen it at school. You know, it wasn't like, you know, this group of people.
It was the last before the internet as well.
It's amazing how. And I asked my mom this because she grew up in the 60s and 70s. And I asked her, I said, you know, was it really this bad when the civil rights were going on and other things in the 70s with the Black Panthers and all these other groups? And she's like, no. That's scary. Because there was a lot of, you know, militarized groups back then. They were militarized. Yeah.
If the 60s and the 70s had the technology that we have now, and
it would have, yes,
it would have been horrible.
It would have been. The internet has ruined everything, and I hate to say it because
there's
also
a lot of things that were out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah,
you know, for people who are just the average person like us, who you know don't do a whole lot, like you know have our schedules and we go about our business. I mean, think about all the stuff that we wouldn't really even have opinions on right now if it wasn't for the overexposure to things that.
Yeah, well, like I said the other night, it's what the internet has also done is it's taken people not only out of their families and out of their original circles of friends to find other groups that speak to their pain and you know what they've been sucked into and how they've been politicized. But the other thing is that it's taken people away from their communities, and you have people from across country trying to solve the problems of another community. It's like, this is, no. And then what it does is it creates a detachment in your own community. You're seeing problems where there were none originally, because you see how bad it is in other parts of the country for whatever myriad of reasons. And there are many. There are many. So it's like, that's really something else there that the internet has done. That I just want to bring back up again. It takes people out of their communities, and it actually it flips the communities they're in upside down in the process.
agreed.
What else do I have?
It's not a safe place.
Internet's not safe now.
Not a safe place. I mean, we used to have those conversations all the time. You tend to just forget about it. Cause it's like it almost feels like you're constantly looking into the flashy thing in the Men in Black.
All over again. Well, think about it. Nobody's really upset right now.
Yeah.
Nobody's really upset right now. And the other thing is. There was a mother, black mother, that was shot by cops. The details are, they can be argued either way, though, even though there's not a lot of evidence that's been put out there. Apparently she had a gun threatening the cops that was standing at the door. You come a step closer, I'll shoot, whatever. I don't know what it is. He was in the door. He kicked down the building. He kicked down the door. I don't know. He walked through. I don't know. Not a lot of people do know, but they do know what they agree on. So aside from that, though, even though that's been going around, I haven't seen it popping up. It's not trending on Facebook.
Yeah.
So it's just like, which deaths? Like, when do we get the winners?
Oh.
What are the media winners? Obviously, nobody wins when somebody dies.
It's the weirdest thing. What exactly happens? Something happens. There's got to be a process.
Something is chosen, and I don't know what the criteria are.
Did you see the thing?
It's
got to
be like this weird. What do you call those words that you're snapped into? What is that?
Like a Manchurian Candidate type of thing.
It's got to be something
like a trigger word.
It's just like media or something. It's presented in a way that it hits the right button and makes everyone go nuts, and then just like that, you're snapped out of it.
We're all
and it's only done. It's only done to distract everybody on something else. Oh, we have this coming up. All right. Oh.
Makes you wonder what's going to be like in 3 months from now when they need people really upset to go to the polls.
Yeah, yeah. The FBI guy, what was the guy at the FBI?
James Comey.
You know, when he came out about the whole thing that pretty much said that, yeah, she's guilty, but she's not. She's going to still going to be the president. It was like clockwork. That, the next day, it was Facebook stream deaths. The next day. I'm not saying that it's not legitimate. Don't get me wrong. I'm not completely being crazy, whatever. Like, I consider things, and I don't have any proof to back it up, and I'll just put it out there. And I'm not going to, I'm not going to preach that it's the truth. But when I watched that death of the second death, the girl, the guy who got shot, and the cop was there. And,
yeah.
And it looked fake to me.
I don't know what to say about that, but
some reason, I'm going to tell you why it looked fake.
About that.
I'm going to tell you why it looked fake to me. Her reaction, the way that she was, it just didn't seem real. And maybe it's because, and I said this before, I've actually said this. Maybe it's because you don't usually see shootings live. You don't usually see things play out. So in your mind, you think that it's like a movie, like people react in this devastated way. And maybe she was just in shock. She didn't know how to handle her feelings. I don't know. But it was just strange.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's a lot. What, Mike?
I actually saw that video that Anthony's talking about, and the reason why I believe it's real is because the cop's reaction was genuine. He was freaking the fuck out because he knew he fucked up.
Okay, yeah.
Cop was freaking the fuck out.
I noticed that. He was scared.
He was freaking the fuck out.
But it just looked like it could have been acted at certain parts.
Yeah, of course.
Just because it looked
with
a little
her,
on
with
that.
Her.
Yeah.
The whole thing could have been acted.
I wasn't.
It could have, like, but it's not. I mean,
you know how people are quick to. How people are quick to just go and say, they put the big angry face on Facebook and they're just like, I didn't have that reaction. I was looking at it and I don't know. I mean, I always look at things with a critical eye. I don't, when I see something, I can tell, I almost can tell off the bat, like, what it is, what's really going on. It's like, for instance, I can watch, you know, like America's Got Talent or something like that, and somebody's on stage, and I see all the cuts, how it's edited, and I can tell that cut right there was not in reaction to that.
Yeah.
That cut was something else.
I noticed that shit too.
You know, I always think like that. I have that kind of. It's
true. No. You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. I mean, I couldn't tell you 100% because I'm not on those shows, but I can definitely tell you that I wouldn't be surprised if they rolled a specific B-roll of just getting reaction faces from the judges. You know, just say, give me a happy face or a surprise face or this, that.
Okay. A perfect example, Robin Zander. We did the Set the Charge thing, the Breaking Band. Okay? Robin Zander, there was like some part where I'm just like, where I was like playing, I was going, big, yeah, and Robin Zander looked at me and was like, that didn't fucking happen. Okay?
Actually, yeah, that was really
punching, man.
So
I mean,
stupid. It was just like, yeah, they made it look like it was like this big.
We got to get that episode and play it on the air.
Yeah. But like, so that's what I'm saying. So even if, now, okay, I'm not saying that it was fake. It was legitimate. And it did happen. He died. And there was that other incident that happened back to back. It happened fast. And it was live streamed on Facebook. It's just unbelievable, though. How, and then what was it? The next day was the riots in Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So immediately, you know, you had that. It was.
Hillary Clinton
weeks,
got erased.
Couple of weeks.
She got totally erased.
The attention. And then, like you said the other day, it just seems like every time that, you know, when you would think that it would just be the focus is on her having to explain herself, Donald Trump goes and says something.
Which he hasn't done in 250 days and counting, right?
Yeah, because why does she need
251?
Seriously, why does Hillary Clinton need to do a press section or anything? What does she have to do anything that for? Why? She all she needs to do right now is shut up. That's all she needs to do. She just needs to shut up. That's all she needs to do. Donald Trump is winning it for her. So
what about the WikiLeaks that's going to drop?
Dude, we still have a Democratic Party left in this country after the last WikiLeaks. Anybody, if any Democrat ever wanted to try to convince me that they had a fucking brain on their shoulders and they had principles, they would have left, they would have burned their fucking Democrat members only cards and jackets, and they would have went to the Independent Party when their entire party was revealed to be a fraud at every fucking level. They were taken, their votes were taken away. They were sold propaganda. You saw how the fucking sausage was made. The media collusion, the racism and the race profiling, and how insensitive fucking creeps they are. I can't fucking believe that there's anything left of the Democratic Party right now. And the fact that there is, and the fact that people have found ways to rationalize and deflect away from it, and oh come on, and oh come on, it away.
It's the same way people
get the
are saying
fuck
it's
out
not
of here.
The Republican Party anymore. I don't believe it's the Democratic Party anymore. It hasn't been for a while.
It's just a name. People say that Democrat. They think that Democrat and liberal mean something. Some people think that Republican and conservative means something. No. Status quo.
I'll just say this before I get out of here. The whole thing with the emails, most people don't even know what that's about. That most people, if you ask someone, like if you ask anybody you can think of that's not political but that will vote for Hillary or that's obviously is one of those that obviously is scared to death of Trump, okay, what the whole emails are about, if you told them that, oh, it's because she had classified information, they probably wouldn't even care.
No, they don't care because these are people. They don't know what that means. Because we're a culture of people where everybody shares each other's Netflix accounts.
Yeah.
We share each other's HBO goes. We're very liberal.
They don't realize.
Yeah.
They don't care about the dangers of something.
No
like
concept
that.
Of that, because the only dangers they know are is in their favorite TV shows, Jack Bauer, this and that, and Jack Bauer always wins, and they'll give their password to this one and that one. They don't care about security. Oh, somebody's going to get it anyway. Who cares if she's emailing classified information around? They don't understand the depth of it because it doesn't affect them at all. They're fucking cotton candy zombies.
This is what I'm saying about, like, when I was saying before that Clint Eastwood would be an untouchable person. I almost feel that Hillary Clinton has now become that person when it comes to, because there's so many videos out there that contradict everything and show that she's lying, you know, literally side by side with what's going on in the hearings.
Yeah.
And no one cares.
Nobody gives a fucking shit. Nobody gives a shit.
I've had people say, I've had someone say to me, I don't even want to read the emails. And I said, I'm not worried about the email. I said, listen, we're past the whole classified thing because nobody did anything and there was corruption at the highest level and no one cared. I said, but, you know, then you have another 20,000 emails that get thrown out there that are really bad. And I was like, do you understand what, you know, label, what was the term again? The label... Loyalty branding.
Yeah.
Race loyalty branding.
For the Taco Bowl.
And I tell people, like, did you read this?
No. Don't care.
No, I'm not going to. Because it's Trump and Russia and, you know, it's foreign governments doing... Exactly. Yeah.
La, 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 la.
Look, I'll be the first person to address the camera and say, I'm voting for Trump in November and I don't care what anybody thinks. So if you want to delete me off of Facebook, I don't give a shit.
Uh-oh. Mike just lost 10,000
yes.
friends.
Okay.
Okay, well, everybody, thank you so much for joining tonight. quite frankly, we've all got our cocks out. That's what Nikki says in the chat room. Mad Mints, Rumble and Roar, Nikki, Moonlit Matt, Johnny Vroom, thank you guys for hanging out. Everybody else that's watching, not in the chat room. I will have this up before midnight tonight, hopefully. Talk to you guys on Monday. And please... check out the Patreon that I made for this show. Just for whatever. I just made it so I had 3 packages to show to a business if they ever wanted to sponsor. But if you guys wanted to drop 4 quarters in a month, I mean, that's up to you. It's like the basket at church. That's all it is. So it's patreon.com/quitefrankly. Really appreciate it. Talk to you guys on Monday. Be good, and I'll see you on the internet thing.